Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome to Episode 3, Series 2 of the Women's Running Podcast. I'm Esther Newman, editor of Women's Running, and in this episode I speak to Jess Piasecki, the winner of the Florence Marathon in 2019. We like to talk about journeys at Women's Running, and Jess's journey in particular is utterly compelling. She came to our attention when she won that marathon in 2019, in so doing becoming the third fastest GB woman of all time. But how she got to that start line in the first place is a rollercoaster journey through injury after injury. She talks to me here about her ultra-sporty start at school and then how her career weaved in and out of dramatic injuries, including spine fractures, and how she built back from that. She also talks very honestly here about how she didn't have a proper period until she was 27, the importance of oestrogen on bone health, and how important periods are as an indicator of overall women's health. Jess is a presenter on the Female Athlete podcast, which is well worth a listen, and there's a link in the show notes, as well as a link to the Fitter Woman app, which she's a brand champion of, and speaks eloquently here about how important it is for young athletes to learn what their bodies are going through. This episode is sponsored by Runderwear, a small brand in Dorset which makes technical performance underwear to prevent chafing. Voted the UK's number one underwear and socks brand at the UK Running Awards, Runderwear is well known for designing seamless, moisture-wicking underwear that runners love. Runderwear is also the sports bra and underwear partner of England Athletics, and their sports bras come with their chafe-free guarantee and are available in sizes 28A to 40H. Women's Running listeners can get an exclusive 20% off all full-priced items online using the code WR20 at runderwear.co.uk. This week, the Runderwear team is launching an amazing competition, giving one lucky listener the chance to win a Runderwear Winners Bundle. The bundle will include everything you need to start your running journey with Runderwear, including a base layer, a sports bra, a pair of chafe-free underwear, and a pair of socks. The winner can choose the colour and style of each item included in their bundle. To enter this amazing competition, you just need to enter your details at Runderwear. There's quite a big URL, so I've made a shortened bit.ly link. So just go to bit.ly/runderwearcomp. That's bit.ly/runderwearcomp. Find the link in the podcast notes.
Yeah, no, it's lovely. It's, you know, well, you know what the running community is like. It's generally speaking, 99.5% of it is just massively supportive and entirely lovely and full of smiley people. So it's Yeah, it's all good. How are you doing?
Yeah, not too bad, thank you.
How's lockdown been?
It's not been that bad. It's been strange. I think it's still going. I still go through like peaks and troughs, really, in terms of enthusiasm for life, I suppose. When it first came about, obviously there was all the issues with not issues, but you know, whether the Olympics was going to be on or not, so that was all a bit uncertain. And then I think once we got into the thick of the lockdown, you sort of just got on with things. And for work purposes, we've been just at home. Like, I only go into work now if I have to go into the lab, or other than that it's just 2 hours a week. And I'm part-time now, so I work Monday till Wednesday. So I went part-time to, you know, give myself more time to train for the Olympics and the trials and stuff, and obviously it's all gone a bit upside down, but it's been okay. I think as it gets a bit darker and things, and you're still living at work, it's a bit of a struggle sometimes, but just have to sort of make the most of, you know, the weekends and get outside and stuff like that. So
yeah,
it's fine. It is what it is, isn't it? I think we're quite lucky in the fact we live in like the nice countryside, so there's lots of things you can do. And we still managed to sort of celebrate. It was my mum's 60th a couple of weeks ago, and so had a few family things for that. So obviously we're just six of us and things, but it's been fine. Just ticking along with training as well. So and we've now got a date for the Olympic trials next year, so it's sort of nice to have that.
What's
a bit of a
date?
Target now. It's the 26th of March, so we don't know the ins and outs of the format, but I think it is going to be like a looped marathon course somewhere closed off. But we've been given a date, so that's nice now. Yeah. Rather than like some lofty goal that we don't know where it is or what's happening.
Yeah, for sure. I wanted to talk to you about, well, I want to talk to you about you, but you know, you're so inspirational. When we first kind of started talking about you a bit in the magazine is because of Florence.
Yep.
And because of Florence, we started like, right, who is this woman, and where have you been, and what have you been doing? And there was, you finished in such an incredible time, third fastest GB woman. And there was that, just that amazing photograph of you that kind of went viral of you finishing. It was absolutely amazing. So I just want to find out what got you there, how you got there.
Yeah, well, it's a long story, I suppose, if you go right to the very beginning.
Well, let's go to the beginning. I mean, tell me about school for you. What was that like? Were you the sporty kid?
Yes, I was very lucky to go to a school that had loads of opportunities for school as well. And my parents were always very active. My dad played like badminton and squash. He played a lot of racket sports when he was younger, and they'd always, you know, been in like going walking and swimming, running, whatever. So I think just from a young age, I always did swimming, I think, from a very young age. And then I played tennis, and then I went to school, did netball, did rounders. And I think my mum brought over, you know, some of the, they were clearing out the loft or something like a few months ago, and she brought around, and there was all these like school team sport photos. And I must have had like, I think 8 or 10 when I was, you know, in year 6 at primary school, because we did have rounders and we had everything. So it was great from that respect. And I think even a few of us were like trying to play cricket with the boys and football with the boys and stuff. And they still let us join in. I can't say we were any good, but I definitely did everything. And I just love sports. I was never really into, you know, I suppose, stereotypical like girly stuff. I'd never wear makeup. I would wear my full football strip anywhere I possibly could. I used to go to the Manchester City Football Club. I was a season ticket holder with my dad, and I used to go there all the time. I think that carried on right through senior school, really. But I started to focus primarily on hockey, probably from the ages of like 14-ish. That became sort of my primary focus. And in senior school, you sort of had to be a bit more selective with the sports that you did. I still did cross country, and we had to do that in PE lessons during some point in term. And then I always did athletics in the summer and tennis. But hockey was still like my favourite, and I really wanted to pursue that. I really wanted to play for England. And I was county captain, and I had a good bunch of like friends who Greater Manchester County, and also played club hockey and played for North of England. And then from there you like go to the trials and things for England squads at like under 15, under 17 level. And I was good, but I was probably like on the you know, border of not quite good enough to make like the England squad. And you know, I was trying my hardest. And then one day I managed to, while I was doing all this, when I was 14, I qualified for the English Schools Cross Country Championships. And I just did that. So your school enter you in like your borough. And so that was, for me, that was Stockport. And if you come in the top eight there, you then go to your county champs, which was Greater Manchester. And then if you come in the top eight there, you go to represent your county at the English schools. And to me at the time, I had absolutely no idea what it was. And I think in the county champs, I came like seventh out of the eighth. So mum and dad were like, oh, great, we've got to go to, it was in Kent, this cross country. But I got to, you think you paid like 20 quid and you got this horrific shell suit. for Greater Manchester, it was like bright blue and bright orange. It was horrendous. But it was, for me, it was like, oh, this is cool. I've got a new kit. And like, we, you know, you stayed in a hotel room with your mates. There was four of us in this room that was probably meant for two people. And that was the best bit for me. And I did the race and I didn't have a clue what was going on. I think I came 23rd in the end. It was just an exciting trip, really. But from there, my actual Ross Millington, he also runs, and we were actually at the same school. We were in quite a lot of classes together and stuff growing up. And his dad actually said to me, you should come down to Stockport Harriers, because Ross would always run. And I was like, oh, that's good. And I think my parents chatted to his, and anyway, I ended up persuading my mum to take me down to another sports club. And mum used to do like the adult sessions while I did the junior ones. And just went from there, really. I used to do like young athletes leagues in the summer. But running was still a priority. Hockey was still a priority to me. So I would like only go down to the track on a Thursday rather than a Tuesday. And once at the weekend if I could, but I'd still be playing, like my weekends would be school hockey, then running, then club hockey, and Sundays might be, club run, and then hockey all in the afternoon. So it was like that for a number of years. And then when I was 16, I managed to qualify for the European cross team as a junior. And I think that was when, like, my mum and dad could obviously see what was happening. Like, I was quite good at running, and it was just getting a bit too much. And obviously, you then got like GCSEs thrown in and all that. And
yeah,
we sort of decided that you need to think, okay, am I going to focus on one? And I decided to focus on running then, which I never thought I would do.
Yeah, why did you do that if hockey was such a passion?
I think it was because I obviously could see I was qualifying and doing well at running in comparison to the hockey. You know, I'd made the Great Britain team, and I was getting a little bit frustrated with my hockey in terms of the training, like in comparison to running. You know what it's like at any level, you come away, it's so satisfying, I think, from either just going for a run or doing a hard training session, whereas hockey is a lot more skill involved. So you're not necessarily coming away all the time like having worked really hard or having got a sweat on, as it were. You know, it used to be cold and dark nights, late nights with hockey, but you'd be practicing a lot of skill. And for me, I wasn't really enjoying that as much. I preferred, you know, like getting a sweat on, basically. And I really enjoyed that aspect of the running. And I think I particularly liked it that you weren't relying on anyone. You know, hockey is a team sport, and there are some frustrations you can get when you're playing at club level. You've got such a mix of ages. You've got young people like I was at the time, and then people who've been there for years, and all different ranges of fitness levels. And me being quite fit, I would get really frustrated. other people, like, are like, come on, run for the ball. That doesn't always happen. So I think that sort of swayed me to then go down the running route, and I could just see a lot more opportunities with it coming up. And so I decided to do that, really. And I think, you know, one day in my head, I think I would go back to a club if I wouldn't have stopped running and just play for fun, because I enjoy the game. The game is really fun. And my sister still plays it. And, you know, I watch when I can, but it's very rare. But I still, you know, I'm interested in how she's doing. And when the, say, the Great Britain squads are on the telly, I will watch. And but for me, I just think that running had that, you know, it had the, it drawed me to it from the exertion point of view, I think.
So then you ran for, well, you ran for the European Cross Country Championships.
Yeah, and then, so I was 16 then, and then I think from there I had a year or so where I was qualifying for quite a lot of junior Great Britain teams. I went to the World Cross Country in Kenya. I went to European Junior Track Championships and the 3,000 metres. And, you know, I was racing fairly frequently, not too frequently, but, you know, going to all the races that we wanted to go to. I think I even received a little bit of kit from Adidas at the time, and then just sort of progressed from there, really. And I was going to all the trials, and it was going really well, and I'd got loads of, like, quite a lot of friends as well within running, not just from a running club, you know, all across the country, like the likes of Charlie Perdue and Emma Palin and all of those. We formed quite a nice knit group of us, and through, I was on home camp with Kelly as well, the Kelly Holmes Initiative at the time. So I used to meet so many girls alike, you know, across the country. And for me, that was really social. And when I was going through school sort of at that time, I definitely had more friends like associated with running than I did like in school. I think at that age, it's hard for schoolmates to understand the level of commitment and what you do and why you're doing it. You know, in comparison to the people who are involved in the sport, you know, it was that kind of sort of separation.
Did you feel like you were sort of thriving under that pressure, or was it tough?
Yeah, there wasn't that much. I wouldn't say there's that much pressure, really. I just sort of got on with it, because I felt as though I was still quite naive to the sport and quite new to it. Where, because a lot of other athletes had been just doing running since we were ages like 11, whereas I had come into it at a fairly late stage at like 16 years old, really. And then, you know, really, really dropping running hockey when I was like only 18. So it was a little bit different for me in that respect. And I think when it's naive, you don't really understand the ins and outs and the opportunities that can happen. And so there's no pressure. So, you know, there's a lot of enjoyment. And at Stockport Harriers, the club I was at, we did have a really good group. There was a good group of girls when I very first joined. And then there was still like always some young boys that I would always train with. And my coach, Dame Turnbull, always sort of provided the banter. And so it was a good sort of social aspect as well for me. So I always really enjoyed it. And then I've always sort of progressed through and carried on with running, but I have had a lot of injuries along the way. So I've had like snippets of running and then an injury and so on. I think my first injury came when I was 18, when I went to, it was before my A-levels, so it was probably quite a good time, so it made me sit down and revise.
What was the injury?
I had a stress fracture in my navicular, which is a bone in your sort of foot. It's like at the top of your, like where your foot like meets your leg, really, I suppose. It's quite a big bone. And again, because I was saying this to someone the other day, I'd never been to a physio appointment at that time. So to then be told, okay, you've got to wear this air cast boot and you probably need to use crutches for a while, I was just like, what? I have no idea what this is. And it came on, I'd been to an international comp in Portugal for Great Britain. Again, it was just like a small meet, and I came back and my foot was a bit sore. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, must have just twisted it in the race, and I didn't really realize because the courses can be quite dry over there on the cross. And I had a scan and the MRI didn't really show anything, so then they sent me for a CT scan, and luckily enough there was like a junior funding kind of thing at the time.
Yeah.
So Paula Dunn, actually, at the time, who is now huge in British athletics, she was sort of my point of contact, I suppose, and she used to help me and my coach sort of guide us through all this and got me to see the doctors and things. And anyway, it came back, it was a stress fracture, and I had no idea what one of them was, and I didn't know how to cross train. You know, if I have a niggle now, I'm like straight on the bike and know exactly what to do and mm-hmm. get the physio appointments in, and we didn't have a clue. Like, mum and dad didn't have a clue either, so didn't really cross train. I think I was lucky enough to have some strength conditioning support through that funding, and the guy at the time was called Rudy, and I think he still works now in, maybe over in Birmingham, I'm not sure, but he really helped me sort of get back to running. He used to make me run, like, do like little drills in and out of cones and things to get your proprioception back, and just sort of really helped me, and I ended up getting back running. Like, my goal was to get back running before I went to Loughborough in the September, October, and start uni. Mm-hmm. And I sort of envisaged going to Loughborough, that would like be where everything happened. You know, it's the place to be, it's gonna answer all of these like injury problems, I'm gonna be the athlete I want to be. And it didn't quite pan out like that. No, at all.
What happened,
as I'm sure all of these you know, you have these sort of visions in your mind, and I think at the time I don't know what, like, when we're picking unis, I think it was either we were told that Loughborough or Birmingham was sort of the centres for athletics at the time, and it was like, go there, mm-hmm. because you're then more likely to get supported on funding. And I went to look around Birmingham with my mum, and I didn't really, you know, get that feeling from it as I did Loughborough, and I didn't really look elsewhere. And I was getting offers from the US and didn't really consider it. I didn't consider like living at home and just carrying on my routine as normal. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if I was to have a child, I'd definitely not do that. But again, we were so naive to everything. So I went to Loughborough, and at the time I was under sort of being passed over from my coach to John Nuttall. But at the time, he was sort of going through a transition, I suppose, out of UK athletics. And Loughborough itself and the UK athletics base there was undergoing a lot of changes.
Yeah.
And it just wasn't like what I envisaged in the training. Probably I didn't get that one-to-one help that I needed, again, coming off the back of an injury and still being quite new to the sport. And the first year was okay. I think I got another injury again at the Christmas, and I had a bit of illness. But, you know, going to uni as a young athlete, you go through such a massive transition. It's not really expected that you're going to, like, everything's going to click.
Yeah.
But to be honest, like, I wasn't really enjoying, I enjoyed my course, but the rest of the atmosphere around Loughborough, I don't think it was for me. And halfway through my second year, I was quite down. I wasn't enjoying it at all. I was going home every chance I got, and I sort of moved back to my home coach and was just doing my own training with a couple of people I knew and doing my own thing. And I basically left Loughborough and I applied to the University of Manchester. I got my place secured there.
Mm.
And I had to start my second year again because you had to sort of get those credits. It was all right doing your first year, but to get a full degree from Manchester, I'd have to start second year again. So I had 6 months where I was just at home. I had a couple of jobs and did some volunteer work, and then started at University of Manchester in September 2010.
Mm-hmm.
So started second year again. So I was obviously a year older than everyone. And I just lived at home. But that was like one of the best decisions I've ever made. Just for my well-being, I think. I loved Manchester Uni. The course was amazing. And I've got a number of friends there now that are my best friends for life. And I think for me, everybody was so diverse. Like Manchester, the city itself, I absolutely love, but it was great to be able to go to uni, have so many different people, so many different backgrounds, so many different, you know, hobbies and interests. Whereas at Loughborough, everybody was sporty, everybody was doing the same thing, and everybody sort of had the same goal. And for me, it was just too much. And I really like having, you know, another focus where you can just switch off from running, and everybody's, and no one cares if you've been for a run that morning or what training session you've done the night before. You know, there's not that kind of slight competition. And you know, they used to be going out and things like that. And I joined like the swimming team and joined the cycling team at the time and just got stuck in. And yeah, it was great. Like the University of Manchester was incredible. And I had a really good time. So that was a really good decision in the end. And I got my degree in the end. So, and when I was there, I think I, so 2010, I had a couple of injuries. I think I actually took up triathlon for a little while. So I was doing a lot of swimming and biking as well, just to try and support my running a little bit. And then in 2011, I decided to move coaches. So I was coached by Mick Woods, who's based in London, and obviously I was in Manchester, so it was always remote. And but I don't mind that, you know, I'm quite capable of following a program. And because I was sort of like commuting to uni, it was like I was like going to work effectively, so I had sort of quite a structured routine and was able to fit everything around my studies. And I started to, you know, I had some really good performances that 2011 year, sort of the autumn end, I suppose. And yeah, just sort of carried on. And I think I finished my degree in 2012. And again, I think I did like the university championships in 2012. I think I came second. I think I even did in 2011, like my second year at Manchester, I did the hill climb championships on the bike. And I came second, so that was quite fun. And then in 2012, I did have some more injuries. That was when I first had a really bad back injury. Like I had my compression fractures.
How had you manage to pick that up? What was going on?
I don't know. I had some really bad back pain, like between my shoulder blades there, when I was struggling to breathe when I was running. And I went to physios and they didn't really know what it was. They thought it was just tight muscles around the area. And my coach said, Mick said, well, I wonder if you've like fractured it somewhere. It just seems a bit strange. It's so high up. See if you can get an X-ray. And we eventually got the X-ray and eventually got the report. And by the time we got all this, it had sort of got a bit better because it had been about 6 weeks. And they identified these compression fractures. And this was because my bones were really quite bad in terms of low bone density. And I ended up going to a sports doctor, a bone doctor, sorry. Mm. And she prescribed me some specific tablets that were meant to sort of stop any bone being broken down, and just stops all of the kind of bone metabolism in general. So, you know, they don't build up or they don't grow, break down, and they just stay as they are.
Yeah.
So after that, I was quite fine, really. It was just sort of like, oh, okay, you just need to be aware of that. Mm. And later, you know, I can realize like why it might have happened. But then that 2012, I managed to win. And this was the December, I won the European under 23 cross country champs. And again, you know, I'd sort of started, so I'd finished my degree now and I was now doing a master's degree, but I decided to do it part time to just really give me a chance of performing. Cause I'd had like the glimmers of what I could achieve, but never really quite got there. And I just really wanted to give it a go, if you know what I mean. And my parents were a bit like, right, okay, do this master's, do it part-time, see what happens with you running, and then if not, off you go into work sort of thing, which I think was fair enough. And so I did, and, you know, I won the cross-country champs, and I felt so easy, and it was just, you know, it was hard, the race, obviously, but in terms of my racing that winter, it was just so what I wanted. I did the Great South Runner, came second. I'd never done one of those events before, and Joe Pavey won it. So I was like, wow, you know, I'm getting there now. And I did a cross country in Spain and I came third, and it was quite, you know, high caliber race. And so, yeah, I beat Finola Britton, who actually, she's Finola McCormack now, but she at the time won the senior European cross. So I was still under 23 at the time. So that whole winter just went as well as we could have expected. And it was great to sort of reach the heights that you sort of know you can do. And I really wanted to sort of translate and build on that.
Were you still getting any injuries at that time?
So during that time, so from like say the August 2012 to December 2012, I managed to string together, you know, some really good training. Again, I was doing nothing special. I was still doing cross training in between sessions. I'd always, I think I double ran like maybe twice a week, but that was it. And a lot of my sessions were on the grass, like loads on the grass, and I'd never put spikes on in training. I used to do it in like big heavy shoes on purpose. And but then unfortunately in 2013, at the start of 2013, I did the Great Edinburgh Cross Country, and I slipped on a log in the race, like sort of jarred my back, as it were, like coming off it. I still ran the race and finished, but afterwards it was like I jarred it. And then I think that was there for a few weeks then. But once my back had been okay, my foot started hurting again. So this is the same foot from when I was 18.
Yeah.
So I ended up having a scan, and I'd actually, the fracture I'd had when I was 18 had actually got worse. So they're not even sure if it ever healed properly.
Oh, God.
Because you can run on unhealed fractures, you know. Some people don't notice them. It's just one of them things. But sometimes they don't, like, knit back together. So I think that might have been what happened to mine. And I ended up having surgery. So I had two screws in my left foot, which I think a few people have had now in their naviculars. You know, more and more people I hear of have had it. But that took a long time to rehab. It's quite a big surgery. And again, I wasn't on any support or anything. So I was lucky enough to have private healthcare. So I was able to get that. But again, I didn't really have a physio at the time. And I didn't really have the rehab perhaps I should have. And so it took me a solid, I think it must have been a year till I raced again. I had the operation in April 2013, and I think I did a local 10K race a year later, as sort of my first race back. So it really took me a long time, and it actually flared up again after the surgery when I'd sort of started my first runs. I think I got to like 15 minutes outside running, and I was getting pain, and my foot really swelled up for some unknown reason. And the doctors scanned it and were like, yeah, you've damaged another about six bones in your foot. Don't know how, don't know when, but the one you've had repaired looks great. So I was like, oh, all right, great. So I think actually at 2013, I was just sort of done with running for a while. And I went to the gym and did like body pump all the time and swimming with my friends and, you know, spin classes and things. So I was still really active, but just not for any real purpose.
Yeah.
But then in 2014, I was like, nah, I'm not done with this running. So started a slow build back up again. I was still with Mick Woods at the time. And again, I got, I think it was September. I think my body likes like this time of year to perform. I did the 10K PB, and I was running well. We won the Great Manchester we won the Northern Road Relay Champs for Stockport Harriers, the senior women, and that was really good fun. But then I got I'm just listing off all my injuries. I have done some running in between.
Yeah.
I got a 10 centimeter tear in my hamstring.
Ow.
So yeah, so I managed to do that. But then in 2015 I actually ran really well in the summer, sort of, you know, from that spring to summer, and I ran PBs right across the board, and I was doing quite well on the track even. So I think I did the Highgate Harriers, I came second there, and I ran in the Diamond League at the London Stadium, which was incredible. I was British half marathon champion from winning Cardiff. And then I was sort of looking to do Frankfurt Marathon to try and qualify for the 2016 Olympics. And I didn't do any too specific training for that. We changed things about a little bit. I had obviously a longer run on the Sunday, but it wasn't at any specific pace. And I just had my sessions just probably got a little bit longer in the reps and shorter recoveries. And I sort of moved my sessions to Wednesday, Friday, so I could recover more from my Sunday run. But there was nothing like the training I do now for a marathon. And I was on target in the race for 2:28 and a half, for example, and that would have been well under the qualifying time, and I felt comfortable. But at around 32K, my foot began to get sore around halfway. But it was just getting worse and worse with every step. And unfortunately, I had to step off because I then couldn't walk on my foot. I honestly thought someone had sawn my foot off. And I think people who've had this injury, I tore my plantar fascia, basically. So people who've had that will appreciate the pain. It was so bizarre. So obviously I had to rehab that.
Yeah.
And I was trying to get back for the 2016 trials, which would have been London Marathon, but it was just too tight with the plantar fascia tear. It was quite an extensive tear, and I had to have quite a lot of time off, and to build back up is quite a lot of rehab. And at that time, the start of 2016, I think I was rushing back probably a bit too much, and that my back flared up again, which was the first time I'd had any back issues since 2012. And what they found through scanning my back wasn't very pleasant. And I ended up it was quite scary from that, and the fact, you know, your back is quite pinnacle for everything, like standing up, walking.
What had they found?
They found that I'd fractured a number of other vertebrae in my spine, and my spine was sort of, it has like a right angle in it really now from the initial fracture, because it's quite small. As in the vertebrae have got that small. So they sort of had meetings about me and said, I'm not sure if this person should be running or not really. And so we decided on a treatment called teriparatide, which is it's a parathyroid hormone analog. So speeds up bone healing, but isn't often used in premenopausal young women like myself. And you can have it now, but I can't have it again, like if I'm 70, for example, I need it, but hopefully they'll have come up with some other ideas by then. So anyway, I had that for 18 months, and luckily enough, everything has improved. My back will still always be something I have to be cautious about. You know, I'd never lift some heavy weights on my back or have mobilization on my upper spine or anything. So I still have to be cautious about that. And my mobility around there isn't very good, but that's just how it is. Then 2016, I don't think I actually competed that much, to be honest, because I then ended up having two hip labral surgeries. I think I did one in August and one in the December. I was still trying to build back up running. I managed to go away to Font-Rémy, which was my first time at altitude. That was an experience. And at the end of 2016, I got engaged, so that was very nice.
Oh, lovely.
And then 2017, again, was pretty similar, really. I really wanted to try and do Berlin Marathon, just before I got married. I don't know why. because I'd done that training initially for Frankfurt. I could see that was where my sort of abilities lied. And, you know, I was really going to be able to thrive in that sort of space. But for me, it was just being able to string the training together was the difficulty. And I think it's a lot of people's, you know, no matter what level, staying fit and healthy is the problem, isn't it? You can do the training. It's the ability to manage life around that and staying fit and illness free, really. And in 2017, I actually changed coaches to Rob Hawkins. You know, I'd seen what he'd done with Callum, and Callum was like thriving at the time, and obviously Derek before that. And I'd met Rob in Frankfurt, and he seemed like such a nice sort of grounded guy. And I met his wife Sandra, who was amazing. And I said, you know, would you be able to help me out, sort of thing. And at the first few months was sort of, he would just oversee things. He just wanted to know what my training was like. And at the time, I didn't really have any structure or anything. I was doing a PhD as well, so I was trying to balance everything. And he just used to give me advice here and there. And after our wedding in 2017, we actually went traveling as well. So running really wasn't a priority at all. I was just having, you know, a good time. And we had such an amazing time traveling on our honeymoon and things. And then in 2018, I think both my husband and I, we got new jobs. So sort of moved away from Manchester. We were both in Manchester still. So Matthew works for University of Nottingham, and I work for Nottingham Trent University. And I started to get some consistency in my running, really. And that's what I did. And at the end of the summer in 2018, I was like, should we do a race to Rob? And he was like, yeah, let's see what happens. And I ended up doing all right. I did a 5K. I think I did 15:55 for my first one, at that podium 5K. And I did the 10K at Trafford, and I think I did 32:51. And it was just nice to be back running. And it wasn't my PB, but it wasn't far off either. And from what I'd been through, I was quite satisfied with that.
Yeah.
And then I continued training and working. And Rob was setting me more sessions now, because he could sort of see I was going in that direction. And I was like, do I do the cross country? And I sort of put it to Rob, and he was like, well, you'll never know. So, you know, I said, I've got half an eye on the European cross. Like, what do you think? And I hadn't run across country in 6 years. And I said, well, what do you think? He said, well, why don't you do the Milton Keynes challenge, which is 5K. And so it's obviously not too long, and the course isn't too treacherous or anything. And then you'll get your answer from that. If it's diabolical, you don't need to do the trials. If it's all right, then you can crack on. And I came second, and to Kate Avery, who's obviously a great cross country runner. And I was like, I'd really got the buzz back then, because cross country was how I fell in love with the sport. So then I think the trials was only 2 weeks away. So I did the trials in 2 weeks, and I came third.
Wow.
So I qualified for the team. And again, that was the first time I'd done cross country. I think even put spikes on in about 6 years. It was just so weird, but so good at the same time. So then went to the European Cross Champs, and for me it was just great to be there. We came second as a team. I came 10th. I was sort of semi-happy with that, but I would have liked higher. But again, you know, it is what it is. And actually, 2 days before that European Cross, I don't think many people know, but I actually twisted my ankle really, really bad.
Oh my gosh.
I was doing my like pre-race session on the pitches at work, which I had done all year. Because we've got lovely, like, smooth grass there. And I twisted my ankle, and I didn't think anything of it. And I finished the session. So it must have been about 8-9 miles worth of, like, warm down, warm up and stuff. And I've stopped, and I was getting changed, getting ready for work. And then after the changing room, I couldn't walk to my office. It was that big. And I was like, how on earth have I done this? I've waited 6 years for this, and I've just twisted my ankle. I'd never twisted my ankle before. So anyway, I didn't then run, I don't think, till the day before the race. And it was okay, but it wasn't perfect. But yes. I ran anyway, and it was a bit bruised a couple of days after, but it was fine.
What, and you still came 10th?
Yes, yeah. So, yeah, I've got some very purple, yellow pictures of my ankle after that race.
Oh.
So after that, I still was sort of focused on the cross and qualified for the World Cross. which again was the famous, it was the first time it was 10K, which I know some people think, yeah, let's get 10K equal men and women. And normally I'm all for that sort of equality and things, but I'm like, 10K of cross country, really? But anyway, we did it and we came fourth team, and I was asked to be captain of that team in terms of the whole, you know, the Great Britain squad. And for me, that was such an honour. And it was just sort of, it was really nice. And I worked like, not, you do a speech the night before, it's sort of tradition. And I tried to work really hard on my speech, and I think everybody appreciated it anyway. So I think I worked out, like, I'd got the senior members of the staff. I knew who they were, so I'd looked them up in terms of their own performances. So, like, Rob Denmark, obviously, he'd been to the, I think he won the Commonwealth, so the steeplechase. Mick Woods had done about, I think he's done about 20-something marathons or something in his time. And Helen Clitheroe was our team manager, so I always had loads of stats about her. Mm-hmm. I was trying to, like, get everyone to know one another. And then, obviously, I knew some of the teammates. So, like, Ross I went to school with, and Adam Hickey, he last went to World Cross same time as me in Kenya, and then Kate Avery, and then a couple of the juniors as well. So I really worked hard on it. I think people were laughing at me, but I wanted to do it. And then the rest of 2019 was just what I wanted, really, for so, so long. I did the Vitality 10K, so came second at the British Champs, and then went to altitude training. It was a bit of a last minute decision, really, but I tagged on along with Rob, Callum Derrick and Derek Ray. I didn't stay with them. I was in different accommodation, but we sort of, you know, they joined me with me all the sessions and runs and things. And I don't think ever at one of our easy runs we would all run together, but normally it would be like a big string of us. So we wouldn't actually run together that often, but it was just so good to see, like, the likes of Callum and the Derricks train, because they all train so hard and recover so hard as well. And for me, I'm always like, have to be doing something. You know, I'm not very good at sitting down, putting your feet up. And it was just a great experience. And we actually traveled from there to Beach to Beacon 10K, which is in Boston area in Cape Elizabeth. And that was really cool there. And I did an all right race there as well. But came back from that trip, like, sort of really motivated, and also the benefits of altitude training. I did actually seem to respond to it and just sort of kick-started the marathon plan then.
Why was it Florence? Why did you decide to do that one?
I didn't originally decide to do Florence. So I was originally aiming for Frankfurt again, which is traditionally, it's normally like the second or the last weekend in October. And everything was geared towards that. And I'd started my taper. And I think this was, must have been the Wednesday before the week of the race. So maybe like 10 days out from the race. I was doing a run. I think I'd done a session the day before. I was doing a run and I was like, my calf's really tight. And there was, you know, I stopped a couple of times to stretch it, and I just didn't think too much of it. And then I think I was traveling to London for a meeting, stretching it on the train. And I was texting Rob. I was like, I'm not sure. I think tomorrow I might just like do a bike session instead. And he was like, yeah, that's fine. But anyway, it didn't get any better. And I tried to rest, it tried to run, and I ended up not being able to race. I'd torn my calf.
Oh, no.
It was just like one of them random things in the taper that comes up. You literally like wake up with it. I had no idea where it had come from at all. And I was gutted, obviously. I was really gutted. But like, you know, had that momentary like sadness. But Rob pulled me around and said, like, look, we can get you in another race. Like, there's Valencia in December, or there's Florence, there's other opportunities. We can just bike our way there. You've got the fitness. So that's what we did. You know, I had to have 2 weeks. I couldn't run. I had to let the injury heal. Biked like I've never biked before. And I always do on my indoor bike. I don't really trust myself outside. So luckily enough, I have a Watt bike Atom that was a nice Christmas present off my birthday present off my husband a few years ago. And it's definitely made, you know, it's been used well.
Yeah.
So I do like the marathon sessions, but on the bike. And actually, they were really hard, much harder. So I'd be on there for 2.5-3 hours at a time, and basically just replicated everything on there. And then when we started back running, I think I didn't even run that much in the lead up then to Florence, because I think after you count for those 2 weeks, we must have had maybe 3 to 4 weeks till Florence. I didn't actually run that much because I was still getting like quite a bit of nerve pain, I think, associated with the calf issue. Not sure if it was like the scar tissue from healing or what really. And I only booked my flights for Florence like 5 days before the race, because that was when I like officially decided, okay, I'll do this. Because it had been like, okay, I'll run a couple of days, it was fine, then the next day it would be annoying and that really. But anyway, we went, and lucky enough, my husband came and my mum and dad came out as well, actually. So it was nice to have them to be able to, you know, calm me down. And there was no one there. There was no one at Florence. There was no pressure. So I just sort of went in with that attitude, really. I spoke to Rob like a couple of days before, and he was like, just do not go off too hard. And that's what I'm notoriously known for doing, I think, in racing. And also from my training, he would try and set me like progression runs and 7-mile progression run. I just can't do them. Like, I think I always go into it and I think I'm worried about, oh, I can't hit the pace if I start off too slow. So he really said to me, like, you have to go off like a appropriate pace. Do not go off too hard.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, I'll really try. And I'm not very good with my watch and things. So anyway, there was 2 pace groups in Florence, and stuck with like the second one because I could see the leaders, and I was like, oh, that's a bit too fast. Even if it was just like a couple of seconds too fast, every K, it all mounts up, doesn't it, as you'll know? So I stuck with like the second group and just tried to stay as relaxed as possible. All that time I was just trying to think, like, keep your shoulders relaxed and stay at the back of that pack so you're not sort of wasting energy moving around from everybody like getting in the way. And there was a few sort of Great Britain lads in there as well who were really sort of nice to sort of tag on to. And then at halfway, I think we went through in like 74:30, 74:40 or something. So I was like, oh, okay, well, perhaps I need to pick it up a little bit to make sure I get the qualifying time. And at halfway point exactly, we joined up with the lead group, and the lead group had a pacemaker. And basically then the next 10K, I found myself at the front, and as soon as I latched onto this pacemaker, it was like I was a different person. I just got competitive and I just started racing, and I don't think I looked at my watch again. I tried to like work out things, because there was a car in front, a few, you know, 20, 30 meters in front with the time on.
Yeah.
I just couldn't work it out, and I couldn't even see the time properly. I have contact lenses, but I couldn't really see it. I was like trying to squint, but I couldn't see the time. So I was like, oh, well, see what happens here. And I think the last 10K, that was when I dropped the person who was just behind me. There was one person who I couldn't shake, but then I think it was 32K. It was a bit of a hill going like over a viaduct kind of thing, and then down again. And I knew that if she was tiring, I could push up the hill. And then I think she'd just had enough and like couldn't be bothered, so I like pushed off down the hill. And then the pacemaker just ran with me to the end, and he was sort of adjusting according to my pace and my sort of feedback to him, really. I didn't really say much, but I was like waving at him like, oh, slow down, speed up, whatever. I just hung on, really. I think when I got to 40K, I was like, oh, okay, I'm ready for the finish now. But that was the last few K were in the city, so it was really quite twisty and cobbles, but those crowds were really full, and I could hear my mum a couple of times. She was like, I love you, Jess. I was like, mother, like, at this point, this is not the right thing to say. I only realized like what time I was on for literally the last 20 meters when I got to that like blue carpet. That was when I could see. And yeah, it was just, I think, you know, looking back, when I've done these kinds of interviews, it makes me feel excited that it actually happened. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I look back and I think everything went right as it could have done on that day. You know, I'm sure a lot of your listeners will appreciate, like, your stomach is good. And, you know, it tolerated all my drinks, all my gels. And that's always been like an issue for me in training. I try and manage things the best I can, but I always, if not more than often, have to stop at some point in the training session. Mm-hmm. But the race, it was fine. The weather was perfect, which again is out of your control totally. So that was good. My warm-up was good. I think my nutrition in terms of the night before, I was able to access all of the foods that I wanted. I'd slept okay, you know, in terms of sleeping the night before a race. And then, yeah, there's the competition was there as well in terms of that pacemaker, and the competition around me was really good. So, yeah, it just sort of spurred me on. And there's actually a video that my husband has of me finishing and they're playing like Pavarotti at music at the end. But as I'm coming into the finish, and it does give me goosebumps when I watch it back, but I had no idea at the time that music was playing. I had no clue. I didn't have a clue. And I think that just shows you like how much in the zone you are. Like,
yeah.
Even, you know, no matter what time you're running, I think you can, you know, when you're in that zone, don't you? Even if it's just a training run and it just passes by so quick, it's mm-hmm. just, you're in that sort of flow and mindset. And I think that was what I was in during that race, really. And it just seemed to happen as I wanted it. And
what's been the reaction like since you've done it?
Yeah, it's been good in terms of, obviously, straight away afterwards I got, you know, lots of media requests, I suppose, and lots of support even at my work and things. And now I'm lucky enough to get a sponsorship deal with Nike, which has been amazing and obviously helps support me able to go part-time, which is, you know, phenomenal. Mm-hmm. I think getting into races is a little bit easier. Obviously, I think it's probably not been as great because we've been in this situation this year. But, you know, it is what it is. I think it's not been as easy to sort of get funding support from a governing body. That's made no difference. But I think that'll always be sort of an issue. So I'll probably still have to sort of prove myself in terms of making teams and doing the time again and that sort of thing. So, and I think for me, it's just, you know, one of the reasons why I did well there, I think, was because I also had quite a consistent year in 2018 to then be able to build on in 2019, and everything sort of came together at the end of that. And it just shows you how much like consistency plays a good role. Mm-hmm. Even if you're not running, I suppose, it's the consistency in the training, or no matter what level, if you want to keep progressing, then just turning up day in, day out, or whatever your training plan, it really, I always see it as like laying the foundations to build that house. It's what everybody needs at whatever level. So,
have you found now that you're, that's a right old catalogue of injuries that you've had.
Yeah. And
have you found that they are, I mean, are you still getting injuries, or is your training such that the injuries are sort of minimised now?
Yeah, I think I'm never going to stop injuries because of the way we're pushing our bodies all the time. So, you know, I still do have, you know, my Achilles issues or a little calf niggle here and there or whatever. But touch wood, I seem to have not been able to have like the big layoffs and the big injuries and things where I have lots of time away and I'm able to manage the issues that I do have better. And I think part of my story is that like I didn't have a period naturally, and then I didn't have one until I was 27 through all of that. And since then as well, I've seemed to have, touch wood, like fewer injuries as well. So I think that was part of that whole problem, that
you've talked really honestly before about REDS.
Yeah.
So is that an umbrella under which you believe that you were falling?
So I think it was a bit of both, really. So some of it would have been sort of REDS situation. Mm. And within that, having not had a natural menstrual cycle when I was a youngster, So going through puberty, you would normally start your period and therefore have an influx of estrogen, which is really important for bone health and bone mm-hmm. development, which I never had. And I then started taking the oral contraceptive pill as advised, as a way to sort of check everything was okay. But that then gives you the perception that everything is okay, when actually the oral contraceptive is a synthetic hormone and will give you a withdrawal bleed, sort of no matter what you are. But it's still not giving you that higher amount of estrogen that you need to protect your bones. And therefore, not only did I have a plethora of bone injuries, but also if I've got a weaker skeleton, then the muscles are attached to that weaker skeleton. So they're inevitably going to be susceptible to injury as well. And I think that was a lot of the problem, why I was getting injury upon injury upon injury.
So how were you diagnosed? What happened?
In terms of getting my cycle back, you mean? Or
Yeah. Well, how did you work out that it was all linked? How did you figure out the Venn diagram of no periods and lots of fractures?
Yeah, it was just through my own knowledge, I think. So my master's degree, I really, at the time, I knew about female athlete triad through my running. And then I came to do my master's. I was doing like a research-based master's, and I wanted to investigate the female athlete triad a lot more. Mm-hmm. And I did do, and I was able to recruit, a lot of the top endurance runners in the country. Like, thank you for their time and everything. And they were really willing. And I obviously did a lot of literature review and research through that, and to produce a thesis, and it's now published. And that sort of made me more aware of it. And then over the years since then, I've become more and more aware in discussions like with various clinicians through both research and running around what the oral contraceptive pill is and what other hormonal contraceptions do. And I think just through my own knowledge, really, it's developed. No one like told me to come off the pill and see what happens. It was just my own thought, really. I thought, well, why not? Let's just see if I can. At the time, it was when I wasn't specifically training for anything. And then, I wanted to make sure everything was okay for future life, never mind for just my running.
Yeah.
So that was when I decided to just like, let's see what happens, really. It was just one of them things. And I really made an effort in terms of my nutrition as well to make sure that I was getting enough of, protein, carbohydrates, fats in. Whilst I wasn't training specifically, I was still exercising, to a moderate level. And some of that was running, some of that was like biking or swimming. I was still active all that time. I was able to start a cycle, and it was just made me realize that, okay, well, perhaps. And then I've never, I'm not going on hormonal contraceptions after that, really, because I'm sort of so protective of it. And for me and my training, it's an indication that I'm balancing everything as I should. And everything's, I'm still able to do like the big mileage weeks in marathon training, but also have a period. Like, that's really key for me. And I think reading about the likes of like Shalane Flanagan and Joe Pavey and Helen Clitheroe all come out and say, I had a natural cycle all the time I was training, and that's why they were so consistent and always at always at those major championships, always performing their best, always improving year on year. And I think I started to look at those people as sort of a bit more of like role models towards where we should be and where we want all girls to like aspire to in their training, that periods are a really good indicator to you that training's going as it should and your balance is right. And
what do women and girls need to be looking out for?
I think obviously we can't stop everybody going on a hormonal contraceptive pill or whatever kind of hormonal contraception they choose, because if that's what they want and that's for them. But I think it's just important to make sure that that approach is right for you. You're not just taking it as a way to check everything's okay, or if you've had a period where you've not had any menstrual cycles and someone's told you to go or use this medication as a way of getting it back, that's not quite the right manner. I think what all women should understand is that hormonal contraception is a synthetic form of contraception, and that the amount of hormone that you get is a lot lower than you would do from a natural menstrual cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, we should try and, if we do have natural menstrual cycles, to sort of take control of it a little bit and be aware of what's happening to our bodies at different times and, you know, where the hormones are at. And there are a number of different, like our podcast or the Fitter Women app, and there's other apps as well that sort of indicate to you what stage of the cycle you're at. And you can
tell me about Fitter Women, that app. How does that help women with their training?
So the Fitter Women app, it details to you the what is going on in your body, basically. So you can input the day of your cycle, so when it starts and when the next one starts, and you can input your own symptoms, and it will adjust accordingly. So it will give you sort of an estimation of what you might expect to find at different stages of the cycle according to what your hormones are doing. But again, if you input your own details, then you can start to sort of track your own symptoms and track your own cycle as to how you feel. And then you can be prepared for that. And you can perhaps start to introduce your own little home remedies, as it were. It might be that if you know you're going to feel heavy-legged on days 20 to 25, then perhaps days 17 to 19, you need to incorporate more stretching into the daily routine, or just spend 10 minutes before bed every night doing a little stretching routine, and it might help your legs the next day. Mm-hmm. And you can start to try these different things that are all, and then some suggestions are made within the app to get you going. And then you start to be able to like prepare for these events and just help you then turn up each day, whether that's training or work or just general life. You can turn up every day just being the best that you can on that day. So I think, you know, it's really good. I particularly like to recommend it to young girls just so they become aware of it and can start to acknowledge what's happening to their bodies, because it's going to be there for a number of years. So we need to understand what's happening, you know, I think.
Yeah, I think it's the main thing. Incredibly important, isn't it? I mean, there was so much I didn't understand about periods and cycles until I was trying to have a baby, for instance.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when you're first getting your period, if you start your period, you know, at 12, 13, 14, you know, you just don't know that stuff. You don't know what ovulation means particularly.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, apps like Fitter Women, I mean, obviously physically, well, I say obviously, but physically it's going to help you perform, like you say, in the best that you can. But I mean, in terms of supporting your mental health as well, I think it's really important, because you can see the patterns start and you just sort of think, okay, well, I will be feeling terrible at this point during the month.
Yeah.
And so you can sort of plan for it, or at least acknowledge that that's something to do with a hormonal balance or imbalance.
Yeah, exactly. I've said the same thing too. I think I've been working with Scottish Athletics the past couple of weeks, and one of the ladies over there said she started to do it as well, and she's, you know, 40 plus, I think she said, and she noticed that, okay, this last week before I start my new cycle, I'm like a monster. I'm really angry all the time.
Yeah.
So someone asked me for a meeting in that day, and I said, actually, can we have it the week after?
Yeah.
And she moved that meeting, so because she knew she would be better that week in terms of mental ability and capacity to be able to, you know, compute all these different things. And it's even things like that, you know, you can just adjust to, if you know you're not going to be able to do those kinds of things, and why put yourself under that strain? Obviously, sometimes we can't help it and we can't move everything, but we can accommodate the best we can, can't we? And like you say, just preparing for that makes you more sort of mentally in control, don't we?
Absolutely. So, and you do a podcast as well, don't you? The Female Athlete Podcast. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So that was sort of our lockdown project, I think. So Georgie and I, so Georgie, who also works for Orico, who has a lot of involvement with the Fitter Women app, we've known each other through running and research circles for a number of years now and share the same passion. And whilst Georgie works a lot more on the applied side, like on the ground with the athletes, I sort of see a lot from the research perspective. And We've always talked about doing like a road show, for example, going around lots of different places, educating women. But obviously coronavirus was not going to let us do that. So she knew Lucy through her work, and we said, why don't we do a podcast? And we were a bit like, oh, okay. And anyway, we just dove right in, and we were able to get support from the Physiological Society. So we got a small grant to be able to like buy the microphone and the equipment and things. And Lucy really, Lucy Lomax is amazing, and she's like a trailblazer in this for us. She sort of puts everything together, keeps us on track, and Georgie and I sort of provide the science jargon. And yeah, we've loved it, and we're on to series two. We've just started series two, so I think this week is episode three, talking about sort of postnatal health, and coming back to running from that. We've got two expert physios on, and yeah, I think like you, it's just, you actually get to know a lot of different people, but also it widens your own understanding, doesn't it?
And, oh, absolutely, yeah.
It's like education tool for yourself, I think, is what we've found.
Oh yeah, it's it can be, as much as it's wonderful to get the podcast out there, it feels embarrassingly selfish, because you're sort of meeting incredible athletes, but yeah, finding out all this stuff that's very beneficial. Yeah
exactly. And you know, we've sort of tapped into areas we might not have thought about, like ultra running and managing your cycle when you're out on the road for 5 to 6 days or something is a area we didn't really think about. And we interviewed Jenny Tuff on that, and that was incredible. And
oh, she's brilliant.
Yeah I think we've spoken to Sophie Power, is another one up
also
and coming.
Yeah exactly
So just all these areas you think about, and then we're planning for series three, and you sort of run out of space. You're like, oh god, we're gonna have to keep going forever, because
yeah,
you've got more ideas.
Great. It's difficult to think of, it's hard not to think of people to interview. There are so many people to talk to.
Exactly.
And like, you know, conversations about running can be so broad that you can talk to Sophie Power or Jenny Tuff at one side, but at the other hand, you know, particularly what you've just been talking about, I mean, how interesting would it be to talk to the manufacturer of Moon Cup, for instance, and how they've kind of like really, really helped like long distance runners be able to do much more longer runs and stuff like that, when it came from a very different sort of standpoint. But I think that sort of like technology in kind of into women's periods is so important in enabling us to run, because you can't do that with a tampon.
Yeah, exactly.
Just absolutely amazing. So I've been thinking about who can I interview about
Well, we interviewed
politics, basically.
Yeah, exactly. We interviewed a couple on like breast health, who was involved in like developing sports bras and all that kind of research, which again, I'd never think about. And especially as a youngster, I think I used to run in, you know, Marks and Spencer's bras kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's not something you come across. And then we've also spoken to, she's called Laura, I can't remember her surname, but she developed the first women's football boot. I know it's not to do with periods, but it's amazing what she was saying, that all football boots are devised based on male feet, whereas this first one she's invented is like based on a woman's foot for women, which is you'd have thought, well, why aren't they anyway? But they're not. So it's just incredible what you learn along the way.
So who do you find inspires you then, like running or otherwise?
I think oh, there's so many women out there that are inspiring. I think the likes of, you know, we spoke about like Paula Dunn earlier. So she was someone I knew growing up, and she was just really passionate about the sport. She was a sprinter herself, and really sort of helped me when I was growing up in the sport. Mm. And now she's sort of heading up para athletics at British Athletics, and what she's done for the sport in general is just amazing, and how she's progressed herself. You know, at the time, I don't think she was a coach or in any kind of fashion. And then she's just sort of taken on board everything, and para sport is just flying. It's amazing, you know. So what she's done, I think, is incredible. And then I really sort of look up to the likes of all those three we just mentioned, I suppose, like Jelaine Flanagan. I'm a real admirer of her, you know, and that group in America, I think, is incredible. And what they're doing for women in sport is great. Joe Pavey has always been one of my favourites. In 2015, she sort of mentored me a little bit as well. I used to call her up and just have long conversations with her. We went to the European Cup together for the 10K on the track, and from there we've just been good friends. And she's just incredible because she's been through so much, and she's always so gutsy about everything, and the way she managed pregnancy as well I think is really inspiring.
Absolutely.
Helen Clitheroe as well, you know, she has managed quite a few senior women's teams now that I've been on, and she's just so down to earth, and again she was so consistent, and it was just incredible like what she's done throughout the sport. And she's gone on to coaching now, which I think is great, and she's got quite a good group of girls. So and even now, like, she's sort of supportive of me, and she does a bit for England Athletics, so she's always like, if you need anything let me know, Jess. And just those people really, but all women in sport, you know, you look up to. I think like Serena Williams, who's come back from pregnancy and is now playing top level tennis again, is amazing. Just anyone, really. So
so what's your next race going to be then, Jess?
Well, the main one would be the Olympic trials in March 26th.
In March, yeah.
So that's definitely the A race. So I think if we can get any B and C races before then, that would be really nice. But obviously, COVID restrictions will determine that. So it'd be nice to get maybe even just a local race before Christmas, if we can like do something perhaps in December.
So what distances are we talking?
Well, obviously, I wouldn't do another marathon until the trials now because it's too close. So it would either be a 10K or a half. But COVID will decide.
Yeah, of course.
I think, you know, throughout this year, we just have to get into like Hakuna Matata mode and just go with the flow.
Yeah, it's very sort of seize the day, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Worst comes to worst, I'll just do a time trial or something with my husband on the bike.
I hope you enjoyed this episode. Don't forget to enter that competition to win all those Runderwear goodies. Go to bit.ly/runderwearcomp to enter. Good luck. This episode was recorded over Zoom. The editor and composer was David Newman, and my brand new mic is the Podcast Pro from Sontronics. It's red and lovely. Please hit like and subscribe. That way you won't miss the next episode, and I'll feel all warm and happy. At Women's Running, we want to inspire you to run, whether you've never run before or you're training for your fifth ultramarathon. We think that women who run need a space for themselves, and we want to be that. Every month, we talk all things running and all things women, from training plans for specific distances to interviews with incredible runners, ideas on how to improve your running and remain injury-free, to delicious recipes to fuel your running, and tons of advice on women's health. The easiest way to get hold of a copy is to go to our online shop at shop.womensrunning.co.uk. Or you could get it delivered direct to your door or to your inbox every month by subscribing. You can buy the digital edition at pocketmags.com or download the app to your phone or tablet through your app store. For all the different ways to read the magazine, go to shop.womensrunning.co.uk. Do join us. We would love to have you with us. Happy running.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.